is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up in about 5 or 10 minutes, we'll speak with the professor, John Clayton, talk some NFL. John Morosi of MLB Network will join us at 5 o'clock, and then our buddy Paul Moyer at 5:30 in another abbreviated edition of Wyman and Bob. But it comes on the heels of great news. The Mariners win the series on the road, take 3 of 4 from the Orioles. And more importantly, you got two bounce-back performances from two pitchers we had strong concerns about in Marco Gonzalez and Justin Dunn.
Yeah, that was the big news there. And especially Marco, the way that started out, we were talking about it earlier, Bob. You had texted me. I was a little bit behind.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'm at about 20. No,
I didn't mean to ruin it for you.
No, that's not up to you. I know I have friends that are like, please don't, you know, tell me the score. And I'm not that way, but you were like 34 pitches in the first inning.
Like, this is a disaster. He's not getting better. This is getting worse. And then it turned around. Well, flip of a switch.
Yeah, innings 2 through 5, he averaged like 12 pitches. And so, you know, it went from 2 runs to 0 in, you know, as far as first inning versus 2nd through 5th. And then he gave up 3 hits in the first inning and 0 the rest of the way. Only 1 walk. He ended up with 4 strikeouts, innings 2 through 5, 5 total.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was a nice repair there, and I felt like, okay, now he's back. It took an extra inning, maybe one more than we thought, but it looked pretty bleak there for a while. And
it was real bleak, Dave.
And Mancini, I mean, he left that one right in the middle of the plate. And Trey Mancini, who, by the way, is an amazing story.
Yeah.
He had stage 3 colon cancer.
Colon cancer, yep.
Yep, and came back. So really, you know, it was kind of nice to see him. As long as we won, I'm sure Marco didn't want to give up the home run, but it was kind of nice to see him. I think that was his first homer since he's been back playing this year. But anyway, really, really good performance by him. And then Justin Dunn.
Actually, it's his third.
Oh, Mancini, is it his third now?
Yeah, third home run of the season.
I thought maybe they said something about maybe at home or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But anyway, It was nice to see that part of it, because those were big question marks. Now, going into the season, Marco Gonzalez, certainly not a question mark, but the way that started out, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, boy, this is not something we had. That was a guy that you count on.
I was panicking, Dave. When I sent you that text, I was out of sorts. I wanted to say more, but I was like, this is bad.
Did you need to be slapped in the face, Bob?
Yeah, I needed something. Seriously, I was panicking. Like, okay. I was certain he was going to get it turned around in this game, and that was maybe one of his worst innings. It was just, man, this is not going well at all. He walks somebody, another walk, then the home run, and you're like, what is happening here? 34 pitches. I'm thinking, he's lucky if he gets through three and a third. Yeah. And then he just, I don't know what happened. He just flipped the switch, and there he was. It looked like the Marco that we've known, come to know and love. And also, I don't know if you noticed who the setup guy was versus the closer in that game. Grafey was the closer.
Okay, Gravy.
Montero came in the inning before that.
Right.
And then they brought in Gravy for the close. So, yeah, you know, I don't think that means anything. I think they're looking at high leverage innings and you know, where they're at in the opposing lineup. And, you know, I think Montero's still their guy. But it was kind of cool to see Gravy out there closing it out.
Yeah, boy, he throws hard.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. But, you know, we heard from Tom Murphy yesterday or 2 days ago that he's fully behind Montero. And the other thing I heard was that, you know, when he was catching for Justin Dunn, you know, I like complaining about balls and strikes.
Mm-hmm.
There was a couple of called strikes that were way outside. And, you know, as far as Murphy kind of settling Justin Dunn down, and maybe that's the bigger story. I don't know. 8 walks in his first outing against Chicago. And, you know, he ends up with just 2 walks, gives up just 1 run, and had 6 strikeouts. So that was a really nice thing to see as well. Love Justin Dunn.
Yeah, he needed that. We needed it as fans. I think service, everybody needed that. And I saw a tweet from Ryan Divish that said something along the lines of, you know, that he had a bleep you attitude. Mm. That was his quote, that, you know, fine, 0-1, 1-0, whatever. I'm throwing it here. If you can hit it, hit it. And that sounded like what he needed. He went out there, and you could argue that first walk, he got squeezed, you know, that the strike zone was moving around a bit on him. And he was going with his fastball. He had some nice movement on his off-speed stuff, and he was I thought he just did a great job. He looked aggressive out there. He's aggressive in the strike zone. So that was great to see. That was really cool to see, because those are two pitchers, out of your starters, out of your starting rotation, that's in flux right now, with Paxton being hurt and, you know, Marco being what he was in the first two games. You desperately needed to see something positive out of both of them, and you did. Right. And then you see, you know, just the hitting star in Mitch Haniger, and home run in each game, still hitting 321 now, 2-for-4 in the second game, comes up with a home run in the first game, so he goes deep in both games. He's so fun to watch when he's healthy. It's just, can he stay healthy?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, a lot of speed, too, man. Watching Dylan Moore and Sam Haggerty, that guy can fly. I mean, it was an infield hit, basically, that he ended up beating out. Haggerty, the one that they called him out, and then he turned around and he was safe. But anyway, so lots of speed on the base paths. It was good to see, no big, huge, nasty, stinky errors or anything like that. And, it was they're in first place. In the
first
American
place.
League West.
We should celebrate that, because I don't know how long we'll be able to say it, but as we sit at this very moment, the Mariners are in first place. And somebody texting in, you know, they beat the worst team in baseball. I don't care. The Mariners are not supposed to win this year. This is about building. This is on the road, and it's a four-game series on the road. You take 3 or 4 from any major league team, that's reason to be happy. You're allowed to be optimistic. If you want to qualify it by saying, well, the Orioles stink, well, how great are the Mariners at this point, being as young and inexperienced as they are? I don't think anybody's going, well, the Mariners are world beaters and they're beating up on the Sisters of the Poor. You know, so it's, you know, it, you're allowed to be happy. Take it in stride there.
How did the texter say it again, Bob?
You know, they were playing the worst team in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, but you had an inflection there that was as if you were, you know, Danny Downer.
Danny, you know they're playing the worst team in baseball.
There you go. Well, they're not really the worst team in baseball.
No,
the Rockies are a little bit worse. Washington Nationals are worse.
Yeah. I'm not making the case that they just beat the presumptive world champions here, but you take 3 or 4 on the road, that's good. I don't care who you're playing. You go in with the idea, let's split. If it's 4 games, let's split. If we get 2, we feel good about it. You took 3, so be happy with that.
Well, and they're 5-2 on the road.
Yeah.
So, again, young team, faced some adversity, and now they're going to, looks like, be facing a somewhat depleted Houston Astros team because of the COVID list.
Yeah.
Or COVIDs, as some people
The COVIDs, yeah. That bums me out. We'll talk more about that.
You want them here. Bob, there's an opportunity for them to win a couple games without their guys, but you're bummed that we're not going to see Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve.
Yeah, I want them to wear it.
The excuse makers.
I want them to wear it. I want the Seattle fans to tear into them, and they're not going to be here to take it. But we'll get them the next time through. You want to talk some football?
Yeah, let's talk to Clayton.
Let's do Clayton.
John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill.
All right, if you guys have questions for John, text him in right now to 710-710. We'll try to get to some of your questions before we let him go. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
How about a first-place Mariners team?
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, we may not be able to say it again at any point during the season, but right now they're in first place.
They are taking on, even though it's a depleted roster right now because of COVID-19, is that, isn't this an Astro team that one year won 17 out of 19 games against the Mariners?
They always give the Mariners
a rough
time.
You had to bring that up, John.
Yeah, I know. But maybe they can turn it around, and so far they have turned it around. I mean, I didn't get a chance to watch game 2. We watched game 1. Marco Gonzalez looked good. You know, they seem to battle and, you know, stay close and get the home runs when necessary. And so, yeah, it's a great start to the season.
John, what about the move the Seahawks made to bring in Alden Smith?
You can never have enough good pass rushers, and he's a good pass rusher. So I think it's an excellent move. I mean, I'm sure the deal is going to be minimum salary. I would imagine there'll be a signing bonus in there. But it's like no risk because, you know, let's say he does have problems off the field. He just gets released. But if not, I mean, you get a guy last year that had 5 sacks. He had 20 pressures.
50.
Or 50 pressures.
Yeah.
50 pressures. He had, 20 quarterback hurries. Mm-hmm. And I think, what was it, like 9 quarterback hits? I mean, that's pretty good. And so, you know, he's a great edge rusher. He's 31. I mean, really, when you look at the beginning of his career from that great class of defensive players from 2011, I mean, his start was one that had him on pace for the possible Pro Football Hall of Fame. Now, we know that's not going to happen now with what happened, you know, in the middle of his career, but I think it's a great move. And, you know, obviously he's been on their radar now for more than a year.
What, was there any other team looking into him? I mean, I didn't read or hear anything. Do you know of any?
I don't know of any, but because, you know, certainly there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to shy away because of his problems. You know that San Francisco is not going to bring him back. You figure with the 4-3 defense, because, again, he's more of a 4-3 guy than a 3-4, even though last year in Dallas they had kind of a hybrid-type defense, and that led to Mike Nolan getting fired. But, you know, most of the 4-3 teams are pretty well taken care of as far as there might have been interest maybe with the Raiders, but they didn't do anything. And in the end, you know, he came up here, he gets the deal done, and now this, I mean, you think about the 7 defensive ends this team has. I mean, now they're pretty well loaded, you know, because you've got the 2 draft choices from last year. You've got, you know, the two re-signs from this year, along with the addition of Kerry Hyder. You still have L.J. Collier, and you still have Rasheem Green. What I'm wondering is that you go into training camp, and, you know, maybe depending on how things shake out and everybody stays healthy, maybe you have a chance to get a draft choice next year for Green or Collier or something like that. But, you know, and then, of course, we still haven't seen Daryl Taylor yet, but you figure, you know, he should make some impact and on it. And really what you look at is that this team looks like it's going back to 2014, you know, 2013, when, you know, they brought in Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill. They played like 60% of the downs, even though, again, they didn't start. But I think what the plan is right now, if you have a 6-7-man rotation, and then you have the ability to, you know, keep everybody 50% or less at the defensive ends, then they're going to be fresher for a 17-game season.
Yeah, I saw Alden Smith was, you mentioned the hybrid type of defense they ran in Dallas. He was standing up, you know, up in a two-point stance in a lot of, most of the snaps that he took in Dallas. The other thing I thought was encouraging, 78-yard touchdown. He looked pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
That 78-yard touchdown for a D lineman. And, you know, he was far and away from everybody, but no one, you know, caught him. But how about the off-the-field stuff, John? Do we know, like, has he gone through? I know the Seahawks are very careful with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he took 4 years off.
Mm-hmm.
Would, you know, as Bob's asking, other teams not inquiring, was it because of that, do you think? Or do you think it was just because of age and not sure about his ability?
No, I mean, I think what it came down to is that, you know, when obviously when you miss the 4 years and you get all the suspensions and all the difficulties that he's had, and it's all on him, that, you know, teams are going to shy away. As, you know, at least Seattle, they'll take a little bit of a chance. They'll take a chance on a Josh Gordon. You know, they'll take a chance. And again, when you take the chance and you're not risking much money and cap room, it's worth it. And of course, I know that, you know, John Snyder knows a lot of Alden's people and all that stuff, knows him very well. And so, you know, we'll get the full story on that. I was surprised that Dallas didn't bring him back. I know he kind of was, you know, slowing down toward the end of last year, but of course it's like the first time he's played in like 5 years, so that may just be a wearing effect. But I think this is a good move for Seattle.
Well, all right. So, what, any other surprise moves you could see on the horizon? I think Dave and I share the same concern about the cornerback mm-hmm. position. Although I don't know who's left out. We know Richard's out there, but that doesn't feel like.
You still have Stevie Nelson with the Pittsburgh Steelers, who was cut. You still have Casey Hayward with the Chargers, who was cut. You know, those could be possibilities. But also, it's like you do have a draft. And now you know in the draft that they're most likely not going to take a defensive end. You know, they're obviously not going to take a safety. You know, they're probably not going to take a interior offensive lineman. They may look at tackles. And, you know, the interior offensive linemen aren't very good this year, so you can ignore that. And then, you know, wide receiver could be something. But, you know, in rounds 2 and 4, and even if John Snyder moves down a little bit from 56, he can still get, you know, a couple of those spots fixed up.
You know, kind of interesting to hear from Chris Carson. Very soft-spoken guy, but he says he thinks that we can be the top rushing duo in the league. And he's talking about himself and Rashad Penny. And it's just not something that you hear from him typically. But, you know, maybe some encouragement having talked to Andy Dickerson, the run game coordinator, which we're not quite sure exactly what that is, but there's a pass game coordinator, and Shane Waldron. And then, you know, Tyler Lockett was talking about it. So Yeah, I just thought that was noteworthy coming from Carson, who's a pretty, you know, kind of a lay low type of guy.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you do know that Tom Cable had that title along with the fact he was like, I think, assistant head coach. So he had the run game coordinator title. But no, I think that you can see the line, particularly with the addition of Gabe Jackson, you know, and also the second year of Damian Lewis, they're going to be that much more formidable as far as that. And of course, you saw how well Brandon Shell played. I mean, still Dwayne Brown looks like he has a lot of good football left. And, you know, the fact that this running game is going to be different. Now, again, the sad part is, you know, if they're not going to have any OTAs to make that transition becomes a little bit harder. But I think it's a real good fit right now in being able to have Carson. And that's the encouraging thing, that maybe Penny can get back to the level he was before he was hurt.
And what level was that?
I mean, when he had the opportunities, he did well. I mean, you know, that rookie year, he got a little bit too heavy, and he had to fight through that. So then he learned, and the times that he did on the field were pretty good before he got hurt.
Yeah, John, I feel like people are seeing a different version of him than I have. He's had two games where he's rushed for over 100. And the rest you look at and go, okay, well, he was okay in this game. And
yeah.
And Dave has brought up specific plays. And I feel like if we're isolating individual play, remember that one play where he was really good? He hasn't had many good moments if we're doing that.
But, of course, I mean, he's the backup.
Well, I understand that.
Yeah, but so it's like playing time becomes an important part of that,
but
too.
But that part of the problem, John, is that Carson has not been durable. He's he's allowed opportunity for the person sitting behind him. The problem is the person sitting behind him has been even more fragile.
Yeah, but I think what you look at is that, okay, so you have two straight years where all the top three running backs in your team get hurt. And they missed some time altogether, you know, because you go back to the end of the 2019 season. I mean, it was, you know, so bad with Penny hurt and Carson hurt that, you know, had to end up getting Marshawn Lynch out of retirement and getting Robert Turbin out of retirement. And then last year, that stretched a little bit toward the middle of the season. I mean, they were down Carlos Hyde, Penny, and Carson. So it's like, you know, part of the thing is that, you know, the times that you figure when Carson's hurt, Penny hasn't had the opportunity to really step up and fill in totally because, you know, he's been hurt.
Yeah, and to me, that's right when he gets going, and then he gets hurt, and then he gets set back. I mean, I think it's been the injuries with him. I don't think he lacks the talent, but that's also a position where you don't tend to get healthier. So I do worry about that part.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, you do know that in the last 2 years, if you take the starting running backs in the league, 32 teams, not one has been able to go 16 games.
Hmm. Wow. No wonder the NFL doesn't value running backs.
Nope, that's why running backs get low pay.
Yep.
Hey, John, I saw on Twitter, actually, that people were – John Gruden's name was trending because people are sort of mocking the fact, I guess they waived Arden Key, or defensive end, and defensive tackle Maurice Hurst. Both of whom were drafted in John Gruden's first year back on the job, and I guess there's just three players left from that draft. One of them is a practice squad guy. So I guess the idea behind this trend is that was not a good draft for him.
No, they've drafted poorly for most of the last 3 years. I mean, when you look at, I mean, Key was a third round pick. I can't remember which round Hurst came in, but then you also look back, and this even came out of the mouth of Mike Mayock, the general manager. He was disappointed in last year's draft and how they performed on the field. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, they can't get back over the top, even though Derek Carr did a good job throwing the football last year and, you know, got that offense moving a little bit better. But the defense was just terrible. I mean, at one point, they were giving up like 35 points a game.
Hey, John, we talked to Moyer a little bit about this, and we'll hear him when 5:30.
Yep.
Yeah. Some of the players. Do you think this is going to break down as far as these voluntary workouts and a lot of these teams like Cleveland coming out and saying, "Hey, they're not going to attend." The Giant players say that they're not going to. I wonder if there's going to be some factions of players on each team that's like, hey, we'd like to get the work in. Can we go in? I mean, is it going to be kind of like every team is different? I don't know, man. I feel like you're not getting better. Mm-hmm. I feel like it feels like a move, a power move more than anything. But for the younger guys, I mean, most teams, half the guys are, you know, struggling to make the roster and have a career. I wonder if those guys show up. Can it just be a team-by-team basis where, you know, yeah, the Giants have, you know, 15, 20 guys that want to come in and go to work?
Well, if you notice, I mean, the Players Association puts out, you know, each team – group of players in the team saying that they're going to not be there. And, of course, now in the last couple that they've put out, Giants and I think the Bears and maybe to a certain degree Detroit, they put out as a, maybe not the Patriots for one, you know, that, you know, the players aren't coming in, but there will be some that will come in. And so what you wonder about is that do the rookies kind of go against the veterans on the team and then show up because they need things more than even the veterans? And then once you get to May 17th, you know, when you have to go on the field, then you start making some value judgments there. I still think in the end, the league needs to back down a little bit, might find a way to kind of bridge the time between, you know, May 17th with virtual meetings and then have maybe some little time on the field. But the big thing is to have some kind of a mini camp.
John, an abbreviated edition with you today, but it was good stuff, and we'll do it again tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
All right, there you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, Mitch Haniger. Boy, is he fun to watch when he's healthy. Looks like an all-star once again. We're going to get into that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up at 5 o'clock, John Morosi will join us. Had a very positive tweet about the Mariners that he sent out. I retweeted it earlier.
Saw that.
Oh, you did?
I looked on it on the... I just typed in John Paul Morosi, and
boom,
his tweeter popped up.
Yeah, he tweeted out. I retweeted this. If you're on Twitter, you can find it at Bob Stelton or at John Morosi. The Mariners lead the AL West at 8-5 after today's doubleheader sweep in Baltimore, and Seattle has the second youngest pitching staff in the American League. Bright days ahead in the Emerald City.
How about that?
And then I just retweeted, and I said, this upbeat gentleman will be joining us today at 5:30. So... looking forward to that. Actually, it's 5 o'clock. I screwed that up. I screwed up.
Oh, no. You'll be tweeted?
I tweeted the wrong time. I'll have to correct that.
You're thinking of Moyer.
I'm glad I looked at that. I'm going to have to fix that. But he'll be with us, and we'll be talking about, get his take on this. And we asked Shannon about this yesterday. Mitch Haniger, watching him, it was very easy to have him sort of out of sight, out of mind, because he's been gone for so long. And all of our conversations about the high-end prospects in this organization revolved around outfielders. Kelnick, Rodriguez, Kyle Lewis, Trammell. I mean, that's your outfield of the future you're looking at. And then you're like, oh, yeah, Haniger's still on the team. You forget that he kept rehabbing, kept getting injured, another rehab, another injury. And now you see what he looks like when he's healthy, and you're like, oh, that's right. Before he was injured, you could argue he was the best player on this team. And I've always said it, he's as close to a five-tool player as they had. And now you see him and go, I don't – and we've all assumed if you hope he can play well, because at the trading deadline, he's going to have some value. He's going to bring something back. When you see him play like this, I'm going, I don't want to trade him. I don't want to get rid of him. And I know Shannon brought up the idea of him being a veteran leader for these guys, and I'm thinking, that's a great idea, but how does that work? If Kelnick is ready and Rodriguez is ready and you've got Kyle Lewis, the defending rookie of the year, and you've also got Trammell, you've also got Fraley, who is depth. I mean, he's not part of that conversation, I guess. But you've got a glut of young, upcoming star-level outfielders, potentially. How does that work? Is he going to be relegated to a backup role on some level? Is he going to be happy with that? Is he going to be like, listen, man, I'm not an old man yet. Maybe compared to these young guys, I'm older. But I'm an all-star-level player when I'm healthy. I mean, give me a chance to play somewhere if I'm not going to be playing every day. I'm just curious how that would work, because I would love for him to stay with this team.
Me too. Well, and I thought he was the most interesting guy to watch this year, just because of – I was fascinated by the workouts. Shannon Dreher did a really good job with an interview with him down in spring training, and just very unusual stuff. There was a couple of videos where it was like he was on monkey bars. You know, there was a lot of, like, pull-ups and things like that, working against his own weight, all kinds of different movements, twisting. He's played in all 13 games, and he's got more at-bats than anyone, 53, and he's also got the highest average, 321. So 10 RBIs is also team-leading. If you're him, and now all of a sudden, you know, Kelnick comes up, Kyle Lewis is ready, and you think, well, what about DH? But you've got Ty France. You know, yeah. And Ty France, that's really the best place for him. and you're Mitch Haniger, you want to play after all that hard work. So, yeah, maybe it works out where it's best for both of them. And I feel like that is what's going to happen. I do feel like somebody's going to need an outfielder that's on a playoff run, and, you know, they just have an abundance of them here. But what a great story. I have a special place for him because, you know, 2018, you're right, he was an all-star. We just thought, man, this guy's just great. But then hit in the face, then he gets hit in the junk, and then he has all the problems with the surgeries, everything. I haven't seen him in 2 years, and he comes back like he hasn't even missed a beat. So it's just a great story. 956 OPS. And he's crushing it right now. And not only that, a couple of like diving, twisting plays that he's made out in the outfield that I was holding my breath that first one against the Giants in the it was in the top of the 10th inning, I think, or maybe it was the 8th, but anyway, he was diving, and you know, you thought, "Oh man, he's going to come up lame." And yeah, he just was perfectly fine. And I read a quote from him. He said, "I have never felt this good." I might have to try his workout.
Yeah, you might have to hang from monkey bars and do the body weight exercises he was doing.
Somehow I think diet has a lot to do with it. That would be quite shocking to me. But.
Send your body into shock. Yeah. Well, here's what it sounded like. He went deep in both games today. Here's number one.
The 1-1. Swing, and this is clobbered out to the gap. Left center field, drifting back and gone into the Mariners' bullpen. What a blast by Mitch Haniger to tie this game in the fifth. Third home run this season by Mitch Haniger, and we are right back where we started, 436 feet off the bat of Haniger.
Man, 436. No cheapies, no wall scrapers here. These are no doubters. And then game number two, he comes up, does the same thing.
The 1-1. Swing, and this is absolutely destroyed. Mitch Haniger going back into the Mariners' bullpen again. Haniger has homered once more at Camden Yards. You just cannot get this guy out. He homers in both ends of the doubleheader and has given the Mariners a 2-1 lead in the fifth inning.
Boy, that sound off the bat, I don't know if it's because there just aren't many people there, but that's loud. That crack of the bat, that's just, listen to this first
one. 1-1.
It echoes.
Yeah, must be because the stadium's fairly empty, but it sounds great. His swing looks great, and the ball's traveling really far.
I didn't catch the name of the catcher in the bullpen that caught it.
Oh, yeah, it was the bullpen catcher. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, but he saw it. He reaches over, grabs his catcher's glove. And then catches it.
That's awesome.
By the way, the Mancini home run, that went right to that fan. And the guy, the way he snagged it, it looked like he had played baseball before.
Yeah.
That's for sure. But with Haniger just crushing it. And it's really, really exciting to see for him. And I just like I said, I have a soft spot for guys that go through that because you think – you're never going to get healthy. That's the feeling I always had when you first get injured and then you have the surgery. You just feel like you're never going to be whole again. And, you know, for him, it was such a long road back, and he had all the setbacks and just the mental toughness that goes along with that. He's just a great example for anybody. And, you know, it's kind of a tough team. Boy, Torrens today, he fouled one off his arch.
Ooh, that one looked like it hurt. He was in pain. Usually those guys will kind of hop around for a minute and shake it off, get in there, and I was like, uh-oh.
And then he got hit in the shoulder, I think, too.
Yeah, catching.
Catching. Yeah, right.
And you see him kind of, it's like a balloon deflating when they get hit. You see him kind of go,
I know exactly
what hurts.
I know exactly what he's thinking.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to have to go to treatment for this. That means you're going to have to get up early and go into the training room to get it right, and it's going to bother you, but you got to put it out of your mind. So, just a great mental toughness leader in Mitch Haniger. So him and Kyle Seager both have just been, and they're guys that we really didn't talk about during spring training.
There were very little conversation, almost none about Haniger. Almost none, because we're so focused on the future and what they've done with the farm system and how much promise and potential exists out there. And again, a lot of it is in the outfield. Your highest level prospects are outfielders. Mm-hmm. You've got some good pitchers. I mean, Kirby and Hancock, and those are high end prospects as pitchers. But you're in terms of ratings, your two highest rated prospects are outfielders in Kelnick and Rodriguez. And you've got last year's Rookie of the Year waiting to come back from injury, and Kyle Lewis. That's three outfielders right there. Oh, and then you throw in Trammell. And then, oh, yeah, Haniger, that guy.
Right.
He was really good, wasn't he? And now you see him, you're going, he's really good, and I don't want him to go.
Yeah, I know, and he may want to go, and you may want him to go at some point. I mean, if you they're so crowded out there. But, you know I've said how J.P. Crawford, by the way, I have him 8 hits over the last
he's getting
games.
It done. He's
batting 400 over the last 6 games.
Huge 2-run double in that game today, and he's still not hitting the ball hard. If you look at his hits, he's not squaring it up, but it doesn't matter. It's a line
maybe
drive.
He's not gonna.
It's a line drive in the scorebook, as they always say.
Yeah,
it's
just, exactly.
But getting it done.
Yeah, he's cool to watch. I just love watching him. But Haniger was my guy.
He's so cool.
He
looks so cool.
He's so cool. I want to be like that guy.
I want to be like JP.
Well, and even I liked his interview afterwards because we've interviewed him before, and he has short answers, but
brevity is key with him.
He's a man of few words, but he's willing to answer any question you ask him.
All right. Coming up, what does the Aldon Smith signing mean for the Seahawks team? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, John Morosi of MLB Network will be with us, despite what I tweeted out earlier saying 5:30. I just sent out a correction on that tweet. 5 o'clock.
Well, Moyer will be happy because he gets double billing.
That's right.
There.
Paul Moyer with us at 5:30. John Morosi coming up at the top of the hour. We'll talk to Paul about the news, and we touched on it with Clayton, about the signing of Aldon Smith. Now, give me your reaction to this, Dave, because as I did a little more research, I became conflicted. And I'll explain why, but just give me your reaction to the signing.
There's a lot of assumption involved. You know, I mean, I'm assuming that the 4 years off for him was very therapeutic for him and mm-hmm. that he's a changed man because he's got some bad stuff in his background. Watching him, he is still the thing that stood out, and you'll hear a lot more about this from Moyer. He's very strong. He is, I mean, remember Reggie White used to have that sort of hip toss thing where he would get a guy on his hip and he kind of
did chuck him.
Kind of did that to Dwayne Brown a little bit. And it was kind of after a game. But yeah, I went back and looked at him. He's mostly standing up against the Seahawks as a, you know, like a 3-4 outside linebacker, but he's a defensive end. And you just remember him with San Francisco. But you know, I thought, yeah, maybe the numbers dropped off, but you do, if you look at the pressures and if Pro Football Focus is to be believed, that's a lot of pressures, man. He really was very active. He's good in the run. The other thing I love about him, he throws his body around. You know, and so for a guy that, I mean, this is only his sixth season last year, but really it should have been his 10th.
Right.
And so, you know, well, let's see how old he is. He's 31.
He'll be 32. And there seems to be dispute over his numbers because I'm reading the ESPN article on him on the signing, and it said he was second to DeMarcus Lawrence on the Cowboys with 33 quarterback pressures, had 48 tackles, 5 tackles for a loss, 2 fumble recoveries, returning 1 for a touchdown.
Yeah.
So those are ESPN numbers. I mean,
yeah,
and he's pressuring the quarterback. I guess that's the point.
Right. Yeah, he's causing disruption. And that, look, a sack is a huge play. It's a huge play. And so, you know, that's, I remember the series where the Seahawks got sacks in 2019, I know, there was no touchdown scored on those series. You know, field goals, there was turnovers, there was things like that. But it's still a huge play. But so when they say a pressure is just as good, no, it's not. It's not. But it is an indication of, you see interceptions on those plays. You see turnovers. You see, mm-hmm. you know, just a play go from, you know, second and 10 to third and 10. It's a huge deal because the quarterback's got to throw the ball away. He's still very effective. You can't tell that he's missed 4 seasons when you look at his 2020 season. The fact that it's probably somewhere around a minimum type of deal is really good. But now, I don't know. It's just all of a sudden you piece together, you know, him. And then just magically, Rasheem Green and LJ Collier just seem better to me because, you know, now you have a bunch of guys that are proven commodities that can rush the passer.
Right.
I think it's going to be,
You don't have anybody that like stands out as like a J.J. Watt or a Jadeveon Clowney when he was
the extra meeting guy.
Yeah, you don't really have that, but he sure gave. I just really respect anytime somebody's able to kind of get over on Dwayne Brown.
Yeah,
and Dwayne Brown is really good. I'll say this in his defense: he did not get a lot of help from his inside guy, whoever it was. And I don't even want to say who it was sometimes.
We love him.
He's such a nice guy.
We love him. But, hey, everybody gets old and his skills diminish, and Yapati retired for a reason.
Right.
Right.
Yep. That's a good way to look at it. So, and I felt like that was the case for him. But anytime he gets beat, it's something. That means something. So Alden Smith, I was always very impressed by the way he played. But he just falls into that category of those guys that can't get out of their own way. But after 4 years away from the game, and that's – I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen, especially in this position, I could see like a quarterback or a kicker or a punter or something. But when you're a defensive end and you miss four seasons, it's pretty much over for you.
Yeah.
And it's impressive. So I really like the signing. I hope that everything – I have not heard. It's hard to kind of find information about him as far as what he went through.
This you know, past season?
Well, I'm talking about the 4 years off and sort of his repair of his personality off the field. That's the thing that's the biggest concern to me.
Yeah, I went through because somebody we talked about him and we were going, yeah, remember that thing in the airport? He said something about a bomb or like we were just sort of fuzzy on the details. He's a guy that unfortunately has had so many off the field moments. I couldn't keep track of everything that had happened. Oh, yeah, you got DUI here. You got busted for this, that, and the other. And I had somebody kind of get into me on Twitter. Oh, just a thing in the airport, huh? What about his domestic violence? I'm like, huh? I didn't remember it. So I went back and looked, and there was a story about it that was not a pretty story. And, I'm really, you know, listen, I've been hammering Antonio Brown. The idea of having that guy in that locker room is about as unappealing as it gets. He's been accused of some really ugly things as it pertains to women. The same is true for Alden Smith. And the fan in me goes, wow, this guy could really help the team. But the moral side of me is going, well, this guy's had so many off-the-field issues, that being one of them. Is there a line where you just go, you know, I don't really care what the guy could bring to the team. You draw a line with somebody's character, something they've done in the past. And, you know, where does forgiveness come in? Where does a second chance? He's had more than enough chances along with Antonio Brown and Josh Gordon and people like that. Although in Gordon's case, as we always point out, the only victim in his wrongdoings have been him.
Right.
He's never hurt anybody. He's never, I mean, literally hurt anybody, whereas that's not true in the case of Alden Smith. So I'm sort of in that weird area of, man, I love the signing on the surface because I didn't remember a domestic violence thing. Then I read it, and then all of a sudden I'm going, well, how can the Seahawks release a statement like they did on Chad Wheeler, just a no-tolerance sort of statement, and then bring in somebody who pleaded out of that? He wasn't found innocent. There was no, hey, he was wrongly accused or any of this. It was there.
I'm glad you brought up the Chad Wheeler thing because you're right. It makes me think that even more strongly that he's recovered. You know, because we have recovered alcoholics. We have recovered you know, people who have violent tendencies, things like that, that go through a change and they're a different person. And the fact that he took 4 years off makes me think that it's a pretty solid case. So I don't think they would sign him without an assurance, at least, that, you know, well, I don't know how much you can get an assurance. I mean, there can always be a relapse, but I would think they feel, you know, and also you have a female owner now. And I think there's a little bit more emphasis on that. You know, I'm not saying that. I mean, I'm sure every owner feels that way. They don't want that. But it adds a little bit more to it. And the fact that they signed him. Now, I haven't heard the story. And maybe that will come out. And that will be interesting to hear. That's for sure. But, I'm just under the assumption that that part of his life is long gone. Long gone. So if that's the case, because I agree with you, you know, it's something that it definitely sometimes you turn a blind eye, but it's also like, do you want to give him another chance or not? And I don't know what he's gone through, but just knowing the way they operate, I feel like it's probably something pretty dramatic. And I'm hoping it's a story we actually get to hear.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to hear it because, again, digging into it and looking at it going, okay, I missed this one. And now, you know, I can't be a hypocrite and say, well, you can't have Antonio Brown in this locker room. Look at what the way he's treated women and what he's done. And then say, hey, Aldon Smith, this is awesome.
He's different, though, isn't he? I mean, Antonio Brown gone through some kind of a change? Like, we don't know.
He lived with Tom Brady. As far as I know, that's it.
It just seemed like he's still sort of active in that life. And apparently Aldon Smith is not. And otherwise, I don't think the Seahawks would have signed him. But I think it's pretty much a minimum deal. It sounds like it will be. You know, maybe there's going to be some incentives in there. But I feel like he's probably repaired. But yeah. You brought up the point, why didn't other teams get him? Maybe, you know, who knows? Why is he signing a minimum deal here?
Yeah, and it's something, and we can get into it deeper later because it brings up the question, okay, if he's okay in your mind, talking about the organization's mind, then I guess Antonio Brown should be fine. And then, you know, where do you draw the line, I guess, would be the question for them.
Yeah, I'd say what's the difference between the two?
Yeah, what and maybe there is no difference because we heard that they wanted Antonio Brown and he chose the Bucs over the Seahawks. Not that the Seahawks said, nah, we don't want to deal with him. He chose the Bucs. So we'll see. We'll see what that means moving forward and get some perspective on that. Meanwhile, as I said, I screwed up the time. I told people on Twitter 5:30, but no, 5 o'clock, you bring in this ray of sunshine, this man, this full of positivity, talking Mariner baseball and all things baseball, John Morosi. He's going to join us next year with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.